Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
Hello, Andrew.
How you doing?
I'm good. It's cold outside.
Yeah.
There may be snow on Thursday.
I know. It's too soon for that.
Weather talk.
One of our favorite things to have small talk about on the early part of these podcasts.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to think there was a time when if 11-year-old me heard that snow was in the forecast like later in a week, oh my God, I wouldn't sleep the next 2 days. I'd be so excited about it. But now it's like the dread that comes with a potential snow day. I hate it now.
You've had all the boy ripped out of you.
Yeah.
And now it's just a husk of a man.
Yeah.
Worried about day-to-day responsibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what. You have got considerably more boring even since I've met you.
I know. It's a problem.
It is a problem. Let's sort that out.
It's not good for the show, quite frankly.
it puts a lot of work on me to be the clown. Obviously, we're doing this podcast, and we will have another podcast with your mailbag in it. And somebody sent me a mailbag which just pointed out what an utter buffoon I am.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you give a teaser? Actually, I'm kind of curious to hear more about that. I live it with you almost on a daily basis, but
yeah,
for the people to see it.
Yeah, a guy has pointed out about the many analogies I have made about one person in particular over the last...
Jose Mourinho?
Yeah, over the last month.
You lost your mind last week in that podcast. It was like an analogy machine had just malfunctioned. You just were spitting them out left and right.
There was too many cultural references. King Lear and Bono.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
You lost sight of yourself, though.
Oh, I became high in my own crapulence.
Yeah, you sure did. What a show this will be. Speaking of Jose Mourinho, he took part in the Manchester Derby over the weekend. We'll talk about that in seconds. You can count them down in your head if you want. Also, Charlie Austin spoke and made some very interesting comments about officiating in this league and VAR. Let's see. Ian Joy will be on the podcast for the first time. He, of course, is one of the voices of NYCFC after they bowed out to Atlanta United FC, but he's also one of the voices in MLS. And he was on the call of Borussia Dortmund Bayern Munich over the weekend. So we'll talk to him about all of those things.
And there's such a clamor on this podcast to do more Bundesliga. Well, you're going to get it.
Yeah, you certainly will. And, of course, the United States and England play on Thursday at Wembley.
In a game that's suddenly become somewhat contentious.
And having nothing to do with either of the teams, all of a sudden it's become like the Wayne Rooney show, oh, by the way, England and the U.S. are also going to play in a friendly match.
Alan Shearer came up with one of the great quotes to describe this, controversy.
How you say
controversy.
Yeah.
He said, it should be an honor to play for your country. Your country should not honor you.
He's
right to a point. I've got so many.
I can't tell. I'm very curious for when we get to that because we've talked about this in other podcasts once this was announced that it was going to happen. But I still can't quite get a read on how you feel about it. I don't even necessarily know how I feel about it. We'll talk about it.
And I'll try and get to the point of whether I care.
Yes. Okay. That now we're getting to the heart of it.
Right.
We have to care about so many things.
It's unbelievable.
It's impossible. Not to say that we fake opinions or anything. We do tell you how we feel.
But this industry is driven on caring about a multitude of things.
Everything. Sometimes you just don't care. And that's okay. You can't care about everything.
Yeah. And sometimes on this podcast, I will say, I got to tell you, no, I don't. I could just shut up and not say anything.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that we did care about, and that was the Manchester Derby over the weekend. Because anytime United and City face one another, it is a match worth caring about if you're a fan of the sport and, of course, if you're a fan of the league. And it's Manchester City, surprising to no one, that go on and prevail over their cross-town rivals. 3-1 is the final score. And I was almost surprised to read that this was Manchester City's first win over United at the Etihad in 4 years, or in the last four meetings?
It's surprising. It is surprising. There was, of course, the inauguration that never happened last season when United came in and spoiled the party in that second half. That's the one that really sticks out in my mind. That was never likely to happen again. From the get-go, Andrew, this was just City's town.
Yeah, it certainly was. The town is blue. There's no question about it. Now, the thing with Manchester City that is kind of, it's kind of starting to rattle around in my head a little bit, that, okay, look at the table. At the top, no one has really pulled away from anyone just yet of those, of like the four clubs there. But I'm sorry, it's hard to watch Manchester City right now and just not think that they are a bit different, that they are a cut above the rest of the competition, not only because of what you're seeing in front of you, but like Gabriel Jesus scored a hat trick midweek in the Champions League. He didn't start this game. Kevin De Bruyne is not playing. Ilkay Gundogan has now come off of injury, comes in, scores the third goal. Like, there's no end in sight, it feels like, to how deep and how great they can really be.
And Leroy Sané comes off the bench.
Off the bench, yeah.
Right at the end, as if to destroy United even further. But look, you know, we've been dancing around this forever. The investment in that club over the last few years, you know, we kind of scoffed when old football men in England said, well, they've spent striker money on fullbacks. They did. Look at Mendy. Mendy didn't even play last season. Comes in, making a huge impact to the team. They've just got to, Bernardo Silva, they could use him sparingly last season, and now he's kicked on to another stratosphere, and you've got both Silva, the elder Silva, the younger. You've got a goalkeeper who they spent a huge amount of money on, who can ping a 45-yard pass straight into the channels from his kickout. They are just bedecked in these jewels of players. And, you know, they brought in Tiki Begiristan, the entire Barcelona backroom team, before Pep even arrived there. This is a long-term spend of money and dominance, and now we're seeing what it is, and we don't, apart from when they thrill us with good football, we probably don't like it.
Yeah, now, here's the thing, though, that kind of separates them from me. You're right. There's no denying that they spend massively, and that's well-documented and well-known, of course. But they're not the only ones doing that, and you have no further to look than the club that they were playing this past weekend. I mean, you know, Lukaku wasn't cheap. Pogba was record-setting when they brought him in.
Exactly.
At the time, Mkhitaryan was a big move.
Exactly.
Like, you know, so there is something to be said for recruiting the right players that you know fit your scheme and having a coach who can work these players in the right way. And I think that's where you're seeing the gap between them and specifically Manchester United.
You saw that team, Andrew, before the game. Your initial thought was, they're not going to have a goal. Alexis Sanchez on the bench, Mata on the bench. He had no interest in going after this game. Now, Lukaku, bringing him on as a late sub, fair enough, but you look at the midfield, Fellaini, Matic, just Herrera. There was no intention to try and win this. Mourinho's philosophy is don't get beat, don't lose.
Yeah, now he did start Martial.
He did, Andrew, but where's the creativity in that midfield to set him away, to set him, you know, to get United on the front foot? Lee Dixon made a brilliant point in commentary. He's like, look at the high line City are playing, and you've got a speedster like Martial in the team. You've got Rashford in the team. Why not play one ball, one long ball over the top? There just doesn't seem to be a tactical plan to this, and it's okay for me to bang on about City Football Group and the wealth they've spent, but United, don't tell me. Somebody tweeted, a journalist, that the biggest trick Jose Mourinho has played with this team, or has played on Manchester United fans, is to convince some of them that that's the best that this team can do.
Right.
It's just not true.
Now, so, look, he did have, in a certain respect, one hand tied behind his back because, you know, you'd like to have Paul Pogba available to you when you're going to play.
But you don't
Manchester
know what
City.
Pogba you're going to get, and you don't know what position he's going to be played in, and is he going to be given the tactical freedom to hurt Manchester City. I honestly, I think it would be wrong to come on here now and say that that game result would be any different, even with Pogba in the team.
You're right.
And that's not being disrespectful to Pogba's abilities.
No, you obviously you're right about that. Nothing in my mind was going to change.
One shot on target in 90 minutes, Andrew.
Yeah.
City had 700 passes. Okay, City are at home. They're a passing team. You expect them to, they had almost twice as many as United. They were utterly dominated, and the penalty even was such a, what's the word? It was such a false, you know, thing to happen in the game, because it was against the run of play, and you're looking at it and Ederson has no need to make that play on the ball. United's one shot on target was the penalty.
Yeah. Now, look, if you're grasping at straws as a Manchester United fan, you can cling to that. Romelu Lukaku comes on as a sub and almost immediately does draw a penalty. So for a guy who's desperate for any sort of confidence moving forward for them to try to get themselves back into top four contention, you know, you'd like, he's going to have to be a part of whatever positivity occurs moving forward. So I guess they'll take that. I wanted to ask you a question.
Okay.
About this, because it just feels like the tide has turned in that city in such a profound way in terms of the balance of power. And I know the historian of this game that you at least claim to be. Is it strange to you?
I don't claim to be.
Is it strange to you, JJ? Like, for example, I think about the New England Patriots here in the United States, and, you know, an entire generation of sports fans are going to grow up thinking that they are the end-all be-all in not just football, but maybe in American sports. Whereas if you were just a little bit older, like our age, I mean, the Patriots were, like, you talk about irrelevancy for their entire history, you know, with a couple brief moments of success. Like, they were just irrelevant.
Right.
And that, but like the generational shift and the change in the fortune of that club occurred so quickly that you have a whole generation that doesn't know that. That is Manchester right now. I mean, Manchester United are the historic club. They're a great club, and they still are a great club. But there is going to be a generation of sports fans in that city that grows up believing that Manchester is blue.
It's so strange, Andrew. And it's so strange for someone of my age, because we spoke off air, and what did we say? City were a joke.
Yeah.
They were a joke. Here's what I did a little bit of thought about that question, and here's some striking things. The year Manchester United became the first English team to win the European Cup, it was actually City that won the league. Before all the money came in from Abu Dhabi, the last time they won it was United's most glorious moment. City actually won the league that season.
Yeah.
The next time United would be crowned champions of Europe, however, in 1999, City were in the second division playoff, which would be the League One playoff right now, against Gillingham. An utter joke. And I mean, Manchester City were almost every year a relegation candidate if they hadn't have gone down already. This was the team of Alan Ball as manager, Howard Kendall and Kevin Keegan. And now they're owned by a country. They're owned by a royal family. It's flipped on its head completely. Andy Mitten, who works for ESPN, writes some really great stuff about United. He is also the editor of the United We Stand fanzine. And so he tweeted this today. The first issue of United We Stand hit the streets 29 years ago in November 1989. Manchester United had played 12 games, they'd won 5, drawn 2 and lost 5, similar to now. The team finished 13th that season with no league wins between November 18th and the 10th of February. That was when Fergie was on the absolute precipice.
Mm-hmm.
Within a year, 18 months, they had the FA Cup and the European Cup Winners' Cup. And we know what happened after that. You do not feel like that is that moment right now. And it's completely turned on its head.
Right. And you don't feel like it's going to revert back anytime soon. Now, that's not to say that Manchester United can't once again be a part of a title race. Of course they will. They're still a great club and they're still perceived that way. And there will be many great days ahead for them. But, I mean, Manchester City are not, they're not going anywhere.
No, they're not. And it's going to take, it's going to take outside forces. It's going to take,
well, I guess we have to see how some of this financial fair play stuff shakes out.
What else could curb them? There really is no way to curb them. And like we said on the podcast last week, we're not entirely confident that the powers that be in European football are going to be able to stop them. It's turned on its head. But again, Manchester United have the brand, the cachet, and the power to change this. Whether the will is there is what I don't know, because the Glazers do so well financially from this football club that, you know, vast important pieces of modern football clubs haven't been added to because they're able to take such rich benefit. So they haven't a director of football. They have a banker in Ed Woodward who is pretty much involved with transfers along with Jose Mourinho. They're way behind the times and they need to show the will to, A, at the end of the season, get rid of Jose Mourinho.
Mm-hmm.
And start again. And the board is bereft of football people too. They need a fresh injection of ideas, similar to what's happening at Liverpool and Arsenal.
Yeah.
Will it happen? I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see. If you are, just a couple of notes on Manchester United, actually. Ashley Young is in talks for a contract extension.
Case in point here.
He's 33 years old. And not only is he looking for an extension, he's also looking for assurances of being a first teamer.
It's remarkable. I don't think... Let's lay our cards on the table here. He's 33 years old. Andrew, is he a fullback?
He's a converted fullback. He's from a winger.
A converted fullback. In the first half against Manchester City, Pep Guardiola identified Young as a weak spot. Every single attack, it seemed, in the first half went down that Man City left-hand side, the United right side of their defence. And, I mean, anybody would struggle. I like Ashley Young for what he's done. Played in the World Cup. It's almost like this Indian summer to his career. It's been really kind of interesting to see how he survived from being bought by Fergie all the way through all this tumult at United. He has been there and has kind of re-established himself in the team. But to think he's got this kind of bargaining power that he can say to them at 33 years of age, playing out a position, I want assurances. It kind of shows the malaise at the club right now.
Yeah. I mean, especially too when Antonio Valencia is knocking on the door. Like, if you're Ashley Young and you do have a couple bad games, they have somebody who's ready to slot back in.
Truth be told, though, Andrew, neither of them should be at the football club. If this was the Fergie cycles of old, when Fergie would get rid of Paul Ince and an Andrei Kanchelskis and a Mark Hughes, and you'd be like, what's going on? Ah, there's a Paul Scholes, there's a Roy Keane, there was all this replenishment.
Well, it happened a little bit, because Ashley Young was playing left back, but then Luke Shaw, who I guess is kind of what you're referring to in that replenishment, unseated Young and pushed him to the right side while Valencia was hurt.
But even in that, Luke Shaw, who's been a whipping boy for two managers, LVG and for Mourinho, is still at the club. Not only that, he signed an extended contract on big money. You just don't feel like, how can you go from where they were in the manager's reckoning all the way to being this solid player that we simply must give a new contract to?
Yeah.
There's a flux at the club, Andrew. I don't know how it's been run.
By the way, he has not ruled out a move to MLS. Hmm? Maybe following in like Ashley Cole's footsteps or something like that?
I would say this, and I don't want to sound like
it. Oh, here we go. Here comes a very derogatory, demeaning comment.
No, I will be an American football nativist about this. We should be able to, at our top clubs, develop US fullbacks who are in their 20s, who have not that many miles on the clock to fulfill those positions. We should not be throwing money at Ashley Young.
Well, he's not that bad, though. He could come to MLS and be a good player.
That is an indictment of MLS.
He's still a good player, and he's playing in the Premier League.
We're going off track here. Why are we having this conversation, by the way?
I didn't want to, but
don't poke me. Don't poke me.
What is that, a threat?
You don't believe in this country.
What are you talking about, monster?
You don't believe we can't get fullbacks, coach them up to play in our own league. We have to bring in doddering old men. Come on.
By the way, also in a world of small victories, Victor Lindelof beat out Zlatan Ibrahimovic for Swedish Footballer of the Year.
I'm going to be a contrarian yet again on this one.
Oh my God.
I would have made that a joint award and given it to his partner for Russia 2018, Andreas Granqvist.
Oh, okay.
They were brilliant together.
Yeah.
They really were. And I would have given it to both of them. The fact that Zlatan was nominated was ridiculous.
Let's see. We continue now. Southampton settle for a 1-1 draw with Watford, but there are some who believe it shouldn't have been 1-1, that it probably should have been 2-2, actually, is how I would probably talk about it. But Charlie Austin, quite frankly, was irate with the outcome of this game, felt that Southampton were robbed of a goal. He was robbed of a goal for, once again, one of those ambiguous rules in this sport that drives us crazy. I know, you know, it bit Spurs against PSV in the away leg.
The Spurs one was not as clear cut as this, in my view. I believe the referee, the linesman, got the decision correct.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So the ball comes across the box. Yoshida is between the goal and the goalkeeper in an offside position. If you watch it in slow motion, which VAR would have offered had it been there, Austin hits it. By the way, he doesn't hit it very cleanly.
No, it looked like he almost hit it twice.
Yeah, hit it into the ground, correct. which is just so Southampton striker right now. That is,
hey, Gabby Adini scored in this game. All right, I won't have it.
Man's on fire, and it comes towards Yoshida, and if you watch it, Yoshida makes that move where he pulls back, mm-hmm. and the if you watch both Yoshida and the goalkeeper makes stutters. I think the goalkeeper gets there if Yoshida doesn't make that move.
See, I wondered if that's... First of all, I'd have to look at it again to see how much of a stutter there was from the keeper. But if that was the case, you don't think it could have been because of the way in which Austin hit the shot, how it kind of did take like...
No, it's concurrent with Yoshida pulling his head back.
See, we're watching it in slow motion where things are slow... Like, I don't know.
I think the linesman got it right, but I don't think that's the point. I actually liked that a player came out and didn't go, well, these things, out, they even themselves out over the course of a season, innit? He came out and he went angry.
Here's what Charlie Austin had to say after the game.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. They shouldn't be in the game. They get a point. We score a perfectly good goal. Make it 2-0. Game's done, dusted. We win the game. Fisher's cost us 2 points today. It's standard.
Can you explain why the goal was disallowed?
Yeah, they said it's offside, hit Meyer, didn't I? Hit it twice, hit me, bobbed up, that's why it done Foster. It's a joke. We've gone about VAR this, VAR that. Help the officials out. Clearly they need help. Clearly, we play in the Premier League, the best league in the world, the most watched league in the world. Give them all the help they need, because clearly they cost us 2 points a day. It's a joke.
Tell me about the performance. You're struggling near the bottom. You needed to all pull together. How many positives were there out there?
Yeah, many positives. We come off that last week, put all that to bed. This week, worked hard, come here to get 3 points. We deserve 3 points today. We've been let down by the officials. That's why we didn't get 3 points.
Mic drop.
Just brilliant. Because it's so strange to me how players who are impassioned come off the field and they're not still fiery up in the moment. They go so, they're so media savvy and media trained that they just go to this kind of banality all the time, and this is just an explosion of exactly what he felt on the field, and that's what post-match should be.
Yeah,
give you the reality of the situation. And I love that one. He's bubbled up, he's hit me twice, that's why it's done Foster. Now, which is in total agreement with what you said.
Right.
Now, before we go on, before you do anything more, mm-hmm. you need to... We've got so many new listeners. Your love affair with Charlie Austin is well noted on this podcast.
I used to adore him, and I still do really like him. And that was... my love affair started with him while he was still in the Championship.
Yes.
Because I just thought that he was Premier League quality, and I was just surprised that he was still down there. I thought...
You're upset by it almost.
Yeah, I was. But his career has been... unfortunately befallen time and time again by injuries.
Yes, he's been very unlucky, and he is a potent goal scorer when fit, although he's not... He looks like he's been in the gym a lot. Like
he's big.
Yeah,
he is big.
And that's indicative of a guy who's had time on the rehab table where he's just like trying to get strong.
And then what really solidified my love affair with him is the fact that I saw him tweeting about Peaky Blinders, which is like the official show of this podcast.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Why aren't we sponsored by some Birmingham gangsters? But he went viral at the weekend for that rant when it was put to a song by Blur.
Hey, they said it's offside, hit my idea. I hit it twice, hit me, bobbed up, that's why Dan Foster. The best league in the world, the most watched league in the world. Now give them all the help they need, because clearly they cost us 2 points a day. It's a joke. Before that's bad, this week worked hard, come here to get 3 points. We deserve 3 points today, we've been let down by the officials, that's why we didn't get 3 points.
So that's a song by Blur off their album Park Life. And it's the title track, and basically they sing the chorus, but it's basically the almost stream of consciousness rant of a Cockney, right? Confidence is a preference to the habitual boyer of what is known as Park Life. Yeah. And so this guy on Twitter, people are so clever with the internet now. They just heard Austin's rant and they thought, this just sounds like Park Life. So they put it to the music, and now I won't stop playing it.
Blur, of course, famous in this country for Song 2.
Yes, anywhere in a hockey stadium you will see many, many drunk Canadians belting out Song 2. Woohoo! But, yeah.
I'm with you on the Charlie Austin thing, just because... Well, I should put a caveat in there. I'm with you in that I liked the way he responded. It was very genuine, and I've said time and time again that if it were me in some of those situations, like, I give managers unbelievable credit sometimes for being able to rein themselves in, because I don't know how I would be able to bite my tongue fresh after a match like that, and you're furious. I don't know how they do it.
And I hope he doesn't get fined for that.
He might.
He probably will.
If it happened here, it would. You know how leagues are so protective of officiating. Look, we don't have to make it a VAR conversation, but I wholeheartedly agree with him. I think it's crazy that it doesn't exist. And the only area where I find fault with what Charlie Austin said is kind of what I referenced at the start of this. Charlie Austin believes they should have won 2-1. Really, if we're going to be fair here, it probably should have been 2-2 because Ryan Bertrand fouled, who was it, Holevas, in the box. So
it was a blatant penalty.
Right, and which wasn't called.
So it works both ways.
Right, so it kind of evened itself out within the match. Now, I know Charlie Austin doesn't really want to hear that. And although Mark Hughes, when he was asked about it, he said, well, yeah, that you're right. The referee got that wrong too. More of a reason that there needs to be VAR. So Mark Hughes actually did concede that. So that is the only area in which I thought maybe Charlie Austin kind of got away from, you know, the facts just a little bit. But I totally get his frustration, and I enjoyed it as a nice, genuine show of emotion.
John's got Brewer's droop. He gets intimidated by the dirty pigeons. They love a bit of him. Park life.
Indeed. A couple more here quickly. Tottenham battle past Crystal Palace.
I didn't see this one, so I need your lowdown.
Yeah, it was, well, no Wilfried Zaha for Crystal Palace, so they were always going to be against it because they just simply don't win.
They're not allowed.
When he doesn't play. You know, it was a nice little mini redemption story, I guess, with Juan Foyth for Spurs as they continue to develop center halves at a pretty impressive rate. He's now come in. And at least for this match, unseated Davinson Sanchez. But we're coming off a week where Foyth was called for 2 penalties. And then he comes back and now in this game scores his first goal for Tottenham to give him a 1-0 victory. But he was also brilliant in defense, which is really what his job is. His job isn't to score goals. But he's only 20 years old. And once again, it looks like, you know, they have this conveyor belt of Vertonghen to Alderweireld to Sanchez and now to Foyth. You kind of, like, the American brain in me is sort of like, is Carter Vickers ever going to play there? Ever?
No.
It's become hard to envision, right? You think they'd have to sell him at some point.
Hey, January, he's got to go on loan again.
Oh, absolutely. Well, he's on loan now, obviously, and you're right.
They're not going to recall.
I don't know if that was a full season-long loan or if that was just half a season. I'm not sure. But whatever it is, you're right. There's no place for him right now on this club, especially as long as Alderweireld is there. But look, it's kind of with Tottenham what we were talking about over the past couple weeks is, like, it's funny. They're not playing the way that you have come to know them under Pochettino over the past few seasons, but the results have been there, and they've even been more impressive than, at least points-wise, than they have been in some of the last few seasons. So I guess you say keep doing what they're doing. They're kind of living on the edge a little bit. They're not putting teams away, really. These games are close. Like Wolves, they build a 3-0 lead, but then allow 2 goals for Wolves to come back and make that really a terrifying finish. But they're getting victories, at least in the league right now, so you can't fault them too much. By the way, I did breathe a small sigh of relief when I saw that Santiago Solari was named. They took the interim tag off of him for the remainder of the season at Real Madrid.
Well, I wouldn't trust that contract will be seen to its fulfillment.
Well, Real Madrid keep winning, though.
But it's league rules, Andrew. So
I understand, but if they continue to win under him, if they have a good showing in the Champions League, I'm not saying Real Madrid have to win it, but it would be kind of difficult to fire him after he turned them around from what they were in the beginning of the season and did well in Europe.
This is Real Madrid.
It would not
in the least bit difficult.
Let's see. And last but not least here, Arsenal somewhat fortunate to escape the aforementioned Wolves with a 1-1 draw.
Extremely fortunate, Andrew. Bernd Leno, excellent. He was brilliant in denying Jimenez at one point, took a nasty boot on the ground on that one, denied Traore late on too.
Yeah.
Aubameyang did miss a sitter, Patricio saved well from Torreira, but if you look at the chances and the preponderance of good chances, Wolves should have won that game. Which, again, we keep saying it, and we've had some Arsenal fans who are saying, well, why don't you give us the grinding out badge? Because we always say Spurs or Liverpool grind out a win. And Arsenal have been grinding out wins, but it's caught up with them, and they were lucky to get away with that one. Liam Brady was interesting on the radio recently. He just said, look, Unai Emery's report card right now is he's got that front line firing, that midfield with Torreira is very good, but... And the but is that defense is not what it needs to be for them to be back.
Which has been the case for the past few years.
Yes, it has. But I guess if you look at it, I definitely think the upgrade at goalkeeper has helped them because you can safely say in this game, he earned them a point.
JJ, I have a wait what stat for you. I called it that because sometimes you hear a stat and you just say, wait, what? You have to like read it again.
Okay.
Two teams have yet to have a lead at the half this year. Cardiff is one. Arsenal is the other.
What?
Yeah, wait, what?
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Seriously.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
That is nuts.
Now, it speaks to their grinding out results in the second half, and we gave you the stat a few weeks ago about how many goals they had scored in second halves compared to first halves.
Crikey.
That's shocking.
Not shocking. Not even in the Fulham game.
What did I just say? You know, you call me a liar?
Yeah, but you are now, with that stat, thrusting Unai Emery and Neil Warnock together, and I'm uncomfortable with it.
Cardiff and Arsenal are the only two clubs that have not led a game this season at the half. That's amazing. Let's see. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be back in mere moments with a little bit of MLS talk. Also, of course, we do need to touch on what happened in Dortmund over the weekend. And Ian Joy will join us as well. Don't go anywhere.
Up against Sancho. Good piece of defending. Good break again here. Witzel, space in behind. No offside. Alcacer up against Manuel Neuer. Paco Alcacer. Lovely finish for the Spaniard. Borussia Dortmund go in front on another clinical counterattack.
Oh, what scenes. What scenes. That's Keith Costigan on the call for Fox. He was joined in the booth by Ian Joy, who will join us in a few moments to talk about that game, which was incredible, and of course to talk some MLS as well. You enjoy one of the voices of NYCFC. Boy, that game was awesome, though.
That's the best game I've seen anywhere so far this season. It was just the level, the quality, even like just the way the ball was moved, the pace, the intent. It just seemed of another-worldly standard. It was excellent.
Yeah, it's nice when the hype meets the performance.
Yes.
You know, we said that about El Clasico. What was it? When was the 3-2? Two seasons ago?
2017.
Right.
And that was just a great, great game of football.
Yeah.
And this was up there with that kind of game. And look, when Lewandowski buries that header and there's no one marking him beyond Burki, and you're like, ugh. Here we go again. But no, Dortmund are different under Lucien Favre. They came back and went on to win the game. Royce, by the way, as good as Royce played, Royce could have had four goals.
Yeah.
He was just, I'll tell you, he is really clicking back into form under this manager in a really great way. I just loved everything about it. And that stadium, the visuals.
Oh my God.
It's just so good.
Absolutely. If we've talked before about if we had to make a list of like the three stadiums where we'd want to see a game, I think that is on there. I'll tell you what, after watching Boca and River,
which was exciting in a different way. It wasn't a great game,
but the atmosphere is just like
the Bombonera was unbelievable.
God. And just like you talked about it last week, but like the architecture of that stadium is just a sight to behold.
It's so steep. And by the way, what a second leg that's going to be.
Yeah.
Oh, it's set up. By the way, one other European football note requires a Thierry Henry watch.
Henry!
Thierry Henry watch.
What a goal!
Ba-ba-boom!
What's the French for ba-ba-boom?
You happy?
Good Lord.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, it's got all the elements there.
Yeah, it sure does. That's so what do you got? You're all excited about Thierry Henry watch.
No, it's just it goes from bad to worse. They got a thumping at home to PSG. Edson Cavani with a hat-trick. Neymar with a penalty. Henry's got the vote of confidence already.
Oh my God. It's from the owner. Has he been there a month?
Yeah. The owner said Thierry is not a firefighter. Basically saying he has to be given time to build and that he's not a firefighter. But I mean, he's not.
Well, but at what point do you start worrying about getting relegated?
It's disastrous. Hey, here's the thing. Don't appoint a novice. Don't appoint a guy who hasn't managed at the highest level to a job that is so tricky as a team like AS Monaco ensconced at the bottom of the league on table. Maybe don't do it.
Right. Like, it's not time for projects. Like, this is when you bring in Sam Allardyce and you get it fixed and then you during next...
Lusam Allardyce. Lusam Allardyce.
Right. This is the moment where there's no time for this. We need to make sure we survive the season and we'll figure out the rest of it when we have a chance to breathe again.
Alain Pardieu.
Exactly. Who's the French version of these people?
Well, Alain Pardieu is Alain Pardieu.
I could picture Sam. He's so desperate. He could probably like throw on a beret and just show up at the Monaco training ground.
He was on BT Sports.
Incognito.
He was on BT Sports at the weekend saying it's perception that his teams play unattractive football. Yes, the perception of my eyes.
It's funny, too, by the way, for something as simple as just getting a guy to say Thierry Henry watch, va-va-voom. Like, the process and the coaching. Because we had one of the guys that works here in New York at ESPN, Rodney Belazaire. He walked in and we said, hey, can you just say this for us real quick? And it's just like this should take 2 seconds. Here's some of what it sounded like. Hello, hello.
That's it.
Rodney, can you, in a creepy voice, say into this mic?
Why would I be chosen as the creepy one? That's right there. That's offensive.
Thierry Henry watch, va-va-voom. Can
Wait,
you say that?
Thierry?
Henry.
Watch.
Blah, blah, boom.
Thierry Henry, watch. Blah, blah, boom. Is that creepy enough?
Did he say it right?
I mean, he's not said his name correctly.
Wait.
You were talking about him. Thierry.
Thierry.
Like a cup of tea.
Thierry.
And then Airy.
Thierry. All one word, Thierry.
Thierry Henry, watch. Blah, blah, boom.
Oh, hey. Thierry Henry watch. Thierry Henry. Oh, Henry! Like French Henry.
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh! See, that's what happens when you try to say it phonetically.
I'll just do
it. And I actually speak French. Thierry Henry watch.
Oh, do it with the accent. Yeah. Let's go.
Thierry Henry watch.
That's perfect, actually. That'll do.
See, once you explain to me that I was speaking French.
God. So there you go. We get to see the sausage being made.
Good Lord.
What a process. So simple.
But I do like it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll live forever now. Let's see. MLS. JJ, we're down to our final four. Go through these quickly because we're going to talk with Ian more about them, so I don't want to be repetitive. But Eastern Conference, we get Atlanta United FC getting past NYC FC. I thought Atlanta looked really good, kind of back to what we had come to know this team to be. I wonder almost if they just like were getting bored towards the end of the season, that they were just like, okay, we're good, we know it, let's just stay healthy, get to the playoffs. And in the process, the Red Bulls just kept going and kind of pipped them there for the supporter shield.
Maybe. Joseph Martinez looks like he's really on fire. The penalty, the weird penalty aside, which I don't know if that's a great system of striking the ball, that volley was wonderful. And Almiron's free kick... They looked very, very good. NYCFC did not look good defensively, and that was a real problem.
No. The stakes feel pretty high, I think, for Atlanta right now. You got Tata Martino, who is leaving.
Pick the holy trinity of Atlanta. Tata Martino, Miguel Almiron, Joseph Martinez.
And you got Almiron's agent talking about him wanting to play in the Premier League, and Joseph Martinez, whose name has come up for transfer rumors basically for the entire season. I'm not going to go so far as to say, if not now, when for Atlanta, but
I would say that.
But I'd be well. Look, I do believe that they are fully committed there, and if guys leave, they'll replenish. Yep. And they still have good players. Even
but
if
there isn't Tata Martino's flying around the place,
right? So again, it's not a last chance here for them. But this is like I don't know. This feels important for them to win now.
Well, win now, and if you don't win now, there's a good chance you've got a bridging year, a transitional year. And that's another year before you can, you know, really achieve what you want to. That's entirely plausible.
Yeah. Red Bulls dominate the second leg against Columbus 3-0. I guess it was, well, I say dominate. It was close for a while. But then the two goals within 3 minutes, what was it, the 73rd and 76th minutes there, helped to put that one away. The early goal, which I thought was from Aaron Long, but it wasn't. It deflected inadvertently off of Moyle. And the Red Bulls are through. And their dream is alive.
And they look confident, and the celebrations afterward were far from muted, considering they've won nothing yet. They were really pumped about this, and they believe, they strongly believe. And
of course,
when you look at the way they played against Atlanta in the regular season, why wouldn't they?
Yeah. Well, the problem, if you know, for Atlanta, I'm so curious about this matchup in particular, just because not to like pigeonhole these teams into a certain category, but you look at Atlanta and you think attack, just all out attack, fun to watch. And when you look at the Red Bulls, you think defense, like strong in defense, incredible defense. Two MLS All 11 players in that defense. Aaron Long, Defender of the Year. So,
but even
I'm excited to see how, like, great offense versus great defense, who wins that
but
battle.
But maybe even in that crucial midfield battle, maybe even Red Bulls have the trump card there, because Tyler Adams was all over the field against Columbus. Like, he covered every blade of grass. I don't know if Atlanta have a player like him.
Yeah, the Red Bulls didn't break the points record by accident. It's important not to forget that. And Western Conference, look, this whole season was just kind of chaos in the West. There was never really any clear-cut best team, which kind of made it fun. And it's left us now with Portland, who didn't win a game for, what was it, they played five matches before they won. And Sporting Kansas City, who were pretty good and pretty consistent throughout the year. I don't think anybody can be all that shocked that Sporting KC are there. But this should certainly be a fun matchup as well.
I couldn't call that one.
No, me neither. I really eat both of them. I'll be honest, I don't have a great feel for what I think just yet. We have some time to think about it, though. First leg's not till November 25th. Quick turnaround, too. Second leg's November 29th.
Yeah, but I mean, once you've had that long break, you kind of want the momentum, or otherwise it loses a bit of juice.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, let's keep this going right now. Ian Joy of the YES Network, who covers NYCFC, TV analyst for them, and also the Bundesliga over on Fox Sports.
Yeah, and you nixed my idea to call this segment Joy Division.
You're more than welcome to refer to it as that. I just don't have the music prepared. I'm sorry.
Well, that's what it will be. From now on, it shall be called the Joy Division.
Ian, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on. I love the name, and actually, it probably should be a regular segment if you're going to call it the Joy Division.
Happy to do it, but I want a jingle, and Andrew was not prepared to put the work in.
Yeah, I admitted foolishly, RIP my mentions, as JJ would say. I admitted a few weeks ago that I had never actually heard of the band Joy Division, and I've been crushed for it ever since. I've gone back, I've listened to five of their best songs on YouTube, and they're fine.
I played Ian's Volley against Augsburg for Sampaoli over Joy Division, Love Will Tear Us Apart today, because I was so excited for the segment.
You got
Andrew.
Goosebumps, didn't you?
Actually, for a fullback, he's leathered it. It's a brilliant goal.
Wow.
Anyway.
It was one. There was only one goal scored, so I might as well have made it worthy.
Ian, I'll tell you what. Let's start. Obviously, like I mentioned, you cover and are the TV analyst for NYCFC on the YES Network. Let's start with them. You tweeted this after NYCFC were eliminated. Far too many underperformers for NYCFC since PV, Patrick Vieira, left. A few simply not good enough for this club. Extremely disappointing. I was, I guess, wondering if you could elaborate on that. Was this a player issue for them? Was this a manager issue that they just didn't kind of connect with this manager after Vieira left? I'm curious if you could go a little deeper on that.
Well, I'd like to say it's all of the above and more. I mean, I feel sorry for players. I was once a player. I recognize that it's not easy when you change your coach, and especially when you're all built into a project. You have been a part of preseason. The coach just sold you on something pretty special. The team was absolutely flying, and they looked like they could potentially go ahead and win the Supporters' Shield and at least challenge for MLS Cup. So losing that coach, that piece of the jigsaw, is massively, vitally important for us to why this team has just collapsed. And it just didn't work out with Domi Turan. He came in and we expected it to be a smooth transition. At least that was what was explained to us. This is a guy who knows the philosophy from Patrick Vieira. He will be able to try and continue what Patrick's left off and make it even better, possibly. And the players let him down. I mean, I'm sure the coaching tactics were obviously opposite to what Patrick wanted to do, different ideas, different coaches, but still trying to play the same way. But the players didn't buy into it. For some reason, the players lacked their performance. Consistency was a real issue. Making mistake after mistake was a big problem for this team because they conceded a lot of goals at important times in games, which lost them games and dropped points. So I think it's all of the above. I think the coach has to take a large deal of responsibility. I think the players have to take an even bigger piece of the cake as far as responsibility goes. But I also blame the club in many ways for allowing this change to happen at this stage in the season. I feel sorry for the players. I feel sorry for the coach. I feel sorry for the club because all three of them are to blame.
Ian, what's your gut feeling on David Villa right now? Is he coming back for another year in New York?
Well, my gut feeling says he will be back. I don't think he'll be too happy finishing off the way he did and leaving the legacy behind without trying to push really hard for an MLS Cup. The reason why I would say he might not come back is because he's starting to look tired. He's starting to look like his legs are going a little bit. He's not as sharp as he was. He did struggle with injury, only started 23 regular season games and missed a chunk of games because of injury. And he was clearly frustrated. I actually met him when he was in the middle of his injury problems, right in the heart of the campaign. And he looked frustrated. He looked like he had lost a bit of heart. And when players start to do that, they start to question whether it's all worth it. Money will come into play because he's on a big salary, so you got to pay this guy. He still scored 15 goals in the regular season, so he can still perform, and he can still perform at the highest level. I'd like to see him stay because I want to see him score more goals in MLS, potentially get to 100 goals. But I think it's going to be touch and go. It's absolutely 50-50.
Ian Joy joining us here on Caught Offside. Ian, what about Atlanta? I mean, obviously the team that just knocked NYCFC out, they've got the Red Bulls coming up in the Eastern Conference Finals. Let's say Chris Armas brought you in to speak to the Red Bulls before the Conference Finals. What are you telling them about how to approach this Atlanta club?
Well, first and foremost, I'm not a fan of the Red Bulls, so it would be very difficult for me to give a team talk in any way to that locker room.
Man, a company man to the end.
I know that their transition in the midway point of the season was a lot smoother than ours because they lost Jesse Marsh and Chris Armas stepped in and basically gave them the best possible opportunity to continue on exactly the way they left off. And Armas is intense, which is the opposite from what Dominic Torrent is in New York City. You know, there was no hardness in that training camp, whereas with Chris Armas, he is an absolute machine. He will push this team on and on. And I'm actually going to go as far as to say this. I think New York Red Bull are favorite in this game. Atlanta are a very good side, no doubt about it. They score goals, they break records, they have the hottest striker in the league who's broken the record. He's not even broken, he smashed it, and he is top class. But I think they make mistakes, and I think teams who are connected together, who are on the same wavelength, who 11 players play for one another, can break them down. And that's happened towards the end of the season against Atlanta, where they struggled against Toronto. They struggled against New York Red Bull back in September, where they were beaten at Red Bull Arena. I think it happens again. My favourites going all the way to MLS Cup final is New York Red Bull over Atlanta.
Ian, do you think it just comes down to a battle of defences? Because I remember that regular season game towards the end where Atlanta went to the Red Bull Arena, and honestly, the defending was amateur hour there, and it does seem, like you said, Aramis's team is more of a unit.
They are absolutely more of a unit. They all buy into the project. They're a great team chemistry there. The team spirit is fantastic. I believe that they're more on the same wavelength than what Atlanta are. There's a few stars in that Atlanta lineup. And when you have one or two players who are higher paid than the others, who are clearly superstars and the others are playing catch-up, it's much more difficult for every player to get on the same page. And even though I think Atlanta are very good and they've got an excellent coach in Tata Martino, who obviously is leaving at the end of the season and they want to make something special happen for him, I think the most complete team, the most well-organized team, the most difficult team to break down is the Red Bulls. I think they've got an excellent goalkeeper in Robles as well. So you're right, JJ. I think it's going to come down to defense.
You mentioned Tata Martino. He was named manager of the season today. Did they get it right?
It's a tough one, but I think they did get it right. I think consistency was very important. The way they finished the campaign was excellent. It's very difficult for anyone to say that Chris Armas deserved it because Jesse Marsh obviously took part for half the season. So I think it's probably the fairest decision. A massive shout out to what Ben Olsen did at DC United. It's not just Wayne Rooney that made that magic happen. So I give them a lot of credit as well. And Ben Olsen, who's been through hell with that team. But I think they got it spot on. I think Atlanta have played probably 75% of the time the most exciting soccer MLS has seen for a long time.
So Ian, who's on the other side of your draw then? Because you have Red Bulls going all the way to the final. So who's in the final with them from the West?
It's a tough one. You know, like going through the regular season was always difficult on that west side because there's an absolute battle there. Seattle found their form. Sporting KC were tough to beat. And of course, those two teams, they went quite far in the playoffs. Seattle just narrowly missing out to my former club, Portland. I think are a tough team to beat. They certainly won't be easy competitors for Sporting Kansas City, and that's an old rivalry match where, I remember, a few seasons back they had that unbelievable penalty kick session that went on for about 4 days. I mean, it was incredible. So I think my favourite would have to be Sporting KC because they are so well organised. They're a team that probably deserves to be at this stage and should deserve to be in the final because, again, as a complete team, from start to finish, from goalkeeper to striker, from the head coach to who he has in the coaching staffs alongside him, I think Sporting KC are favourites to go all the way to the final.
Ian, I'm curious for your thoughts on Portland even being at this point in the season. I mean, the season started March 4th. They didn't win a game until April 14th. I mean, are you surprised, seeing what we saw at that point early on in the year, are you surprised to see them still playing now here in November?
Yeah, I think so. I think having a coaching change always makes it difficult. A new coach comes in, new ideas, and you have to buy into that project. And at first, we all thought it was going to be a failure because they struggled. But MLS gives you the opportunity to start slow and finish strong, or the opposite. You could start strong and finish slow and still make the playoffs. So they give you that opportunity. Once you get into the playoffs, it's anyone's game. You have to be on form. You have to be lucky. You have to obviously hope that the referee's decisions go your favour. And when it comes to penalty kicks, it's an absolute gamble. So you've got to be on your toes and recognise that just getting to the playoffs, even when you hit a low patch of results in the season, is the most important thing. And Portland did that. We remember some of the champions over years, going all the way back to 2009 when I was at Real Salt Lake. I mean, we just made the playoffs. And then that team went all the way on to win MLS Cup, and that can happen to these guys as well. So Portland Timbers are a team that nobody wants to face, and I know they've got a rivalry against Sporting KC, so it's a tough game for Sporting.
Ian, changing it up a bit here, you talked about luck, and you were lucky enough to be on the call for the Clásico at the weekend, Borussia Dortmund versus Bayern Munich. Now, I had DVR'd the game, I had family over, and I went to the boozer. And I'm trying not to look at it because they've put it on the TV. The highlights are on Fox coming around again on FS1. And I'm trying to talk to someone whose eyes keep darting to the TV. Whatever I'm saying, it's just not that interesting. And every time I turn around, something brilliant happened. I went home and I watched the game in full. Is that as good a game as you've seen lately?
Oh, lately, yeah, for sure. And I'd even go as far as say over the last 2 or 3 years in the Bundesliga, it's probably as good a game. There have been high-scoring games, more high-scoring games that are thrillers, but that game, as far as entertainment value from start to finish, did not disappoint anyone. And I'm actually disappointed you didn't watch it live with the sound blasting inside that pub, because I tell all my mates to do that. So get my voice banging out there in the boozer.
Yeah, I find you and Costigan too parochial. It reminds me of being at home. So I just.
I blame Keith for that.
Yeah.
Nah, it was amazing. I mean, it was just from start to finish, just end-to-end action. Borussia Dortmund looked poor. They looked tired in the first half. They were outshot, outplayed, outpossessed. Bayern looked potentially back to their best and certainly dominated the first half without scoring that second and third goal, which would have probably won them the game. They allowed Borussia Dortmund to get back into the game, having the scoreline only at 1-0 at halftime. But the second half just blew me away. The changes that they made, obviously Favre is an experienced coach. He recognises that changes had to be made. Team talk must have been electrifying at halftime. And when you've got some superstar players and young kids who are willing to go that extra mile for you, you always have a chance. And this Borussia Dortmund side right now are so much fun to watch. They have talent. And right now, you know, you can't even see a Christian Pulisic getting into that starting 11 at times. He's only started 4 games in the Bundesliga for them, which is crazy. But Sancho has been absolutely on fire for them. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, actually, with Christian Pulisic.
Oh, God.
Yes, I'm very protective of young Christian. because we had Stefan Butzko on with us a couple weeks ago, who covers Borussia Dortmund for ESPN FC. And we asked him, is Christian okay? Is he being well taken care of? Should we be worried? And he he said, don't worry, he's a lockdown first-team player. You've got nothing to worry about. He's in good hands here. And I said, okay, that's good. But now we see, you know, it seems like he's struggling to get into the first team. And hearing you say that, you know, it kind of fills me with a little bit of worry here. I mean, is Pulisic kind of now been relegated to sort of a sub or bench role for them?
No. I think he is a part of a terrific squad that's been assembled by an unbelievable coach. And I think he's lucky to be there because he is at the right time. This is a world-class player, Christian Pulisic, absolutely world-class. And at some day will probably be worth more than $75 million. And I think right now there will be a lot of teams out there questioning the fact of his future at Borussia Dortmund and seeing how stable he is in his own mindset. But if you look at the big picture, Borussia Dortmund are in the German Cup. They're in, obviously, Champions League and compete in the domestic league. And there's no doubt when he plays in the Bundesliga, he's electrifying. And he loves to perform and he enjoys it week in and week out. But he can't play every game. And they've got so many talented players, Borussia Dortmund, young players that need to play. So the coach is doing a tremendous job of being able to manage Christian Pulisic, Jadon Sancho, Bruno Larsson, type of players who are playing in a similar position, giving them all equal games. I mean, Pulisic, if you look at the games that Borussia Dortmund have played in the Champions League, he's played, you know, a number of games for them. And he can be happy that he's played those games. And then in the German Cup, he's played, I think, both games for them. So he is playing his fair share of games. He has to be patient. And I think he is definitely in the right place right now because Borussia Dortmund are on the way up. And if they win the Bundesliga, he's one of the main reasons why it happened.
Well, the hope for Lucien Favre's, you know, safety that he continues to play him because Andrew would take a trip to Germany and would try and enforce his views. He's hugely protective of young Pulisic. It's unnerving.
Yeah, I'll fly a plane right over that stadium. Favre out if he doesn't get in that side. I'll do it.
Ian.
Well, it's tough, though, because you know that this guy is now a legend there, right? He's only been there for about 4 months, but after the weekend, he is a guy that's very difficult to replace.
Ian, talking about your own career path, NYCFC, CFG, such a global entity, but in terms of a cult football club, there really aren't many like St. Pauli where you played. Their very ethos, their message, their fan base is truly unique. Like, what was it like to play for a fan base like them?
Great question, JJ, and it brings back so much memories. Every time I get the chance to talk about St. Pauli, it makes me excited. I'm so happy right now that they're getting more recognition, and to think that this is a team that's playing in the second division in Germany and still gets recognition is incredible. And one of the reasons why is because not necessarily what they do on the field, but what they do off the field, their ethos, the fans, the supporter groups, the politics, and the push that they do to demonstrate on match days and obviously try to push the brand. They do an amazing job. And this is a club that I sneakily used to go and watch when I was playing for the city rival Hamburg. I mean, I would go on a Friday night and I'd take my father with me and we would hide on a Friday night, just get our caps on and go and watch St. Pauli play because at that time they were in the third division. There was 20,000 crazy St. Pauli fans rocking out to the halftime show and the shocking soccer that was performed on display. They loved every minute of it. And until you go there, until you experience, until you live, until you recognize what St. Pauli is, you'll never fully understand it. Going to the Millantor, putting a jersey on, the skull and crossbones is a feeling. And you're joining a religion. You're joining a political statement. You're joining a fan group, a group of people who believe in the same thing as you want as a free world and to give people every opportunity to be successful in life. And no discrimination in any way is allowed. It's truly a wonderful place to be. And they continue to push this club and this brand forward. And I'll forever help them.
Will St. Pauli fans on the street, if they see you, they'll recognise you, they'll come over to you. They're that kind of fan base, right?
I was lucky enough to play at St. Pauli at the right time. I actually moved, obviously recognising my love for the supporters and the stadium at that time, which was not a great stadium. It was a hole, you know. It was a dump, but sometimes we couldn't even afford to pay the electric bill to put the lights on in the warm up. We'd have to wait for the tickets to be sold during the game during the warm up so that we could turn the lights on the other half of the field. That's how bad it was.
What year is
it? It was
2007.
2004, 2005.
Unbelievable.
2005, 6, and 7, yeah. All the way up to 2008. But I arrived at the right time. And talk about Christian Pulisic being with the right group of players at the right time and right coach. It happened to be me back in that time. I went from third division to second division, went all the way to the semi-final of the German Cup, and we created millions for this club, and they managed to get themselves out of financial problems. They managed to build the stadium up to getting 30,000 now sell-out stadiums for every game that they have, and they obviously got the opportunity to have a couple of Americans, a Canadian on their team, that we helped spread the brand awareness. And because of that success, I'll always be considered to be a key part of that unbelievable time for St. Pauli. So every time I go back to Hamburg now, I put my hat on, I put my hood up so that nobody knows who I am, because I might not be able to walk around too much. I'm going back in March for the Hamburg Derby, so it'll be a test.
Oh, that's cool. That's really good stuff.
They even had Nike, I think, was it Air Max or Jordans made? Nike had special ones commissioned with St. Pauli's skull and crossbones on it.
Yeah, you know what? It was Air Force Ones. I remember it was 2009. I just left and they sent me a pair. It was Air Force Ones, and that's not where it stops. They went all the way from having, obviously, the skull and crossbone on the Nike Jordans, and it went all the way through clothes, it went all the way through like computers, design, speakers, and you could even get your own St. Pauli condom. How about that?
Oh, that's great stuff. Ian Joy, like I said, of the Yes Network and Fox. Thanks so much, man. We appreciate the time.
Andrew, JJ, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so interesting to talk about that kind of cult supporter-owned, supporter-driven football team. And now Ian is, you know, a part of the commentary team for what is a global entity in NYCFC and City Football Group. It's a real contrast.
Yeah, you have me interested in like wanting to run to YouTube now and look at a bunch of St. Pauli clips and highlights.
I would absolutely recommend it. It seems like it's a fun away day, and it's one of those more niche. I'll definitely concede that if you go to Williamsburg, you will see some hipster fans who just love St. Pauli, and they don't understand why you're not watching Bundesliga 2.
All right, well, I will start watching Bundesliga 2. Let's see, what to watch for. I did not include that in what to watch for. I apologize. UEFA Nations League, JJ, Thursday, 2:45. Stop me when you have something, because I really don't.
No.
Croatia and Spain, Friday at 2:45. The Netherlands and France. I guess the Netherlands are experiencing a little bit of a resurgence.
Ronald Koeman, are they back? Is Memphis Depay now the greatest player in Europe?
No, I mean, they're playing well.
They are.
After having missed the last two major tournaments, you were wondering if there was just maybe a massive talent turnover that was going on there. And I don't know, maybe you're starting to see kind of like the seedlings of the next generation.
In some ways, yes. But in other ways, Ryan Babel is still playing for Holland. So in other ways, no.
That's tremendous. Let's see. Sunday, 9 a.m., England and Croatia.
That's
another
tasty
rematch. That's the second time they'll have played now since they played in the semifinal.
Yeah, so they know each other really well.
Yeah. And then international friendlies. This one jumped off the page to me, JJ.
Yes.
I felt very fortunate in that moment to know, hey, I do the show with a guy who's from the Republic of Ireland, because they play Northern Ireland Thursday at 2:45.
Yeah, and it's, how would I do the math? 25 years since we played in the last qualifying game, a vital qualifier, Northern Ireland versus the Republic of Ireland, to go to USA 94.
Wow.
That was just a huge game, and Spain did us a favour on the night, defeating Denmark, and we took a point from Windsor Park, being 1-0 down for most of the game, and it was a time of huge political strife in Northern Ireland, political violence, and so it was... I mean, if you talk to players about going up there, the atmosphere was really raw. There'd been a massacre only a few days prior to that game. So it's amazing. It's kind of heartening for me to be able to look at this fixture and not feel political tension or being politically charged. We've come so far in 20.
So that doesn't, when you see that, that doesn't send like a shiver down your spine.
Oh, it reminds me of that night in Windsor Park. Was some of the most disgusting scenes I've ever seen. People who were there.
And how is it now? Will they be able to, like... Are there going to be chants that are offensive? Is there going to be, like, is there a larger police presence? Or is it kind of like, hey, we're all good now. Let's just enjoy this all together.
I think the fan bases have moved on in particular. I don't think there'll be politically charged chants. I think the only thing that might come up is, again, James McLean will be there. James McLean, who came up in Derry, played in the Northern Ireland youth system and then defected to play for the Republic of Ireland, as is his choice as an Irish Catholic. And he and the poppy thing might be the only crosswords that would be. But that depends on what element of travelling fans come from the north. And the element that I saw at Euro 2016 when we were both at the tournament in France was a very friendly element. And I don't feel the same chills that I used to feel back in the day over this fixture.
Well, that is good. And then, JJ, Thursday at 3 o'clock p.m., England and the United States at Wembley in London.
Yes. A friendly, for which there will be senior caps handed out, not a testimonial, but yet it does feel like a testimonial as Wayne Rooney will take his bow, which is the main story coming out of this game, certainly from the English perspective and the English tabloid media perspective. This is Wayne Rooney's final bow. He will play some part in the game in the second half. He will not start. He will not captain. He will not wear number 10.
He said he's made no demands of Gareth Southgate. He is just going to enjoy this.
Yes.
And is like a no pressure. This is supposed to be fun. And hopefully it is.
Now, there's a few people objecting to the use of an English international where full senior caps are being handed out to say goodbye to Wayne Rooney. And that's been a talking point for a lot of people. Now, it's obviously not a Nations League game, which is ostensibly competitive. Actually,
it is. Whether or not you want to take it seriously is up to you. But
no, it is competitive. So this is not a competitive friendly. Wayne Rooney has said that his representatives and the FA had been looking for a fixture that made sense to do a final farewell to him. I don't know where I am on this. I oscillate widely between these are proper England caps and should not be handed out willy nilly, and also maybe. I really, what I've come down on is that this should have been billed as a testimonial. No senior caps handed out. The US would come over and we would play and you'd sell out the house. The money would go to the Wayne Rooney Foundation. Now, there is some monies from the game going to the Wayne Rooney Foundation, but not ticket sales because it is a senior friendly at Wembley.
I guess here's where I come down on this. Look, I don't mean to belittle what it means to earn a cap for England. That's a major honor.
Yes.
So I don't want to belittle what it is that Alan Shearer says. I don't want to belittle what it is that you're saying about
this. Yeah, it's an honor to play for your country. Your country should not honor you.
Right. But part of me kind of wants to say, like, relax to the people that are kind of that opinion.
Well, me.
Yeah, like, calm down, all right? This is a friendly, let's not take this game and just the sport in general too seriously. Now, the only reason, though, that I feel conflicted about it is there are some players where I would totally understand it and be cool with it. Like, if the U.S. ever wanted to do this for Clint Dempsey, would we have a problem with it? No. I don't think any American soccer fan
would. I think it would have to be a testimonial. He is retired. I would not use up a senior cap for this.
Oh, but to me, like, there's guys like Dempsey or Donovan that, like, they've earned one more cap. If we want to give them one more cap in a game that is kind of in their honor for all they've done for U.S. soccer, I would have absolutely no problem with it. I really think that the only reason people are making a big deal over this is because it's Wayne Rooney. Because there was always a split among England fans as to whether or not he was beloved or hated as an England player.
Yeah.
So I really think if this was like a universally beloved England player, nobody would have any problem with this. It's a friendly, let's all enjoy ourselves. Like, he deserves it. He's earned it. It's a chance for us to give him the ovation he deserves. But I just don't think Rooney's that guy. And that's the only reason that this whole thing is kind of surprising to me.
And you say that, but it's amazing how many people are going to go to this game, that the ticket sales have been very, very hot. And I'm just wondering, with the Wayne Rooney element to it, did the FA look at this game and think, we're going to have trouble selling out Wembley for the US in a November international, and let's try and tie something into this that is going to drive ticket sales? And that seems a little bit cynical. Also, for the longest time, I thought this money, that the ticket sales money was going to the Wayne Rooney Foundation. Ticket sales aren't going to that charity. He's also retired, Andrew, like fully retired.
No, I understand.
His papers have gone in. I don't know. I don't feel great about this.
All right. From the U.S. perspective, Jonathan Klinsmann goes into the side for the Americans, goalkeeper. So I hope to see him get some action.
It's going to be interesting to see.
Over, if not this game, against Italy as well. That is also a fairly high-profile friendly that the U.S. will be taking part in next week. A couple guys who I'm most interested in. This is the easy one to say, but for an interesting reason. Christian Pulisic. One, I'm glad to see him healthy again. Two, like we talked about with Ian Joy, he's not getting regular minutes necessarily right now for Borussia Dortmund. So maybe he has a chip on his shoulder. And that chip may be even a little bit larger when you factor in Jadon Sancho, who is basically unseated Pulisic right now for those minutes. Might be starting for England in this game. Now, I'm not saying that there's any tension between them. Maybe there is. I don't know. I have no clue.
I would doubt
but
that.
I would think that Pulisic probably wants to show him up in some kind of way.
Oh, absolutely. Players are professional footballers are very much of the mindset that you've kind of laid out there. It's not that he wants to
they might be great friends.
They are probably great friends, but it's point proving as well, especially when you didn't start the biggest game of the season so far, biggest domestic game anyway. So, yeah, 100%. Players are very much it's a team game, but there are 11 personalities and 11 selfish people who every moment of every game believe they should be starting. And it's dog-eat-dog to get to that small percentage of people who get to play at the highest level in football. So you need that mentality. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's Thursday at 3 o'clock. We will do a special podcast right afterwards. So you should see that one. Hopefully we'll have it done somewhere around 8 Eastern time, 8:30,
should be
somewhere
out.
Around there.
West Coast people are going to have it for perfect timing, and you'll have it for your commute on Friday. And also, if you have any questions or anything you feel we didn't cover in the podcast here, you can send us an email, cutoffsidepod@gmail.com and @COSoccerPod on Twitter. We love hearing from you. I got some really good ones. Really good ones this week. Interesting. I sometimes feel that our listeners are more interesting than us.
Oh, yeah.
Well, more interesting than you,
100%.
Specifically.
100%.
You know our little chat about comedies? Someone from who was involved in a comedy club got in touch with us.
About stand-up comedians?
Yeah, stand-up comedians, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Straight away. We've got such a vast smorgasbord of listeners.
It's a great word. Cornucopia, smorgasbord, these are great words. By the way, before we get out, I did want to mention Zlatan Ibrahimovic won goal of the year in MLS for that famous goal against LAFC.
Are throwing his body in. It's going to fall for Ibrahimovic. Oh, come on! Come on!
Now, that was epic when he came on in that game against
I'm okay with
original
that.
El Trafico and scored that goal from like 40 yards out to tie it when they had been down. That was one of the most memorable moments of the season. But for goal of the year, I think Zlatan should have won, but I don't know. I kind of thought it maybe should have been this one, his 500th goal that he scored, this one against Toronto FC.
Here's Dos Santos. Lifts it into the area. Ibra scores! That is number 500 for Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and only he can get the 500 in that way.
Like that one that he just kind of like...
Keeper should have come and caught it.
You're so that guy.
No, I love the volley. Because
it was such a cool goal that I just felt like I hadn't really seen before.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going for when I want my... Like, Zlatan's... That 40-yarder that he scored was awesome. It was, like I said, super memorable. But I have seen it before. That one against Toronto, I don't know.
I think the context of the derby and all eyes being on that Carson, California for that game... Carson LA, yeah. Rather. I think that's what tipped it, probably. And also, I would say this, the keeper should have come.
I know. You feel that way. You've been very strong about that because you love to just rain on everybody's sunshine and parades. By the way, before we get out, I know we're going really long now, and now it's my fault. But with the U.S. and England playing each other, I went on the BBC's website, and they did a special kind of thing of American players that have played in the Premier League.
That's nice.
And so they did, basically, they gave you, put 4 minutes on a clock, and they wanted you to name the 15 American players that have played at least 50 matches in the Premier League. So I took the challenge, and I'm kind of ashamed to say that I got 11 out of 15. Now, I'm not going to ask you to sit here and
do this for
4 minutes.
I'll tell you who you missed.
Okay, tell me who I missed. I have the list. I took a picture of the screen because I wanted to bring it up. Two of the ones that I missed, I was so mad at myself.
You missed Roy Weggerly.
I did miss him.
And you missed John Harkes.
John Harkes, no, he didn't. 50 matches in the Premier League.
Oh,
no.
Premier League. Ah, that's not fair.
Why is it not fair?
Well, John Harkes was like, I suppose John Harkes played for Sheffield Wednesday before the Premier League, so he doesn't get in.
I missed, like you said, Roy Weggerly, 75.
Joe Max Moore.
Yes, very good. I missed him for Everton, 52 matches he played for them. And then these two, I can't believe I missed these two. I'm almost embarrassed to say it.
You missed Joe Max Moore, you missed Jay Demerit.
No, he didn't have 50.
Oh, he didn't have 50?
No.
Okay, go on, tell me who you missed.
Jonathan Spector, I missed.
Oh my God.
Relax, I don't think you would have gotten to me.
Jonathan Spector.
Oh, you're a liar.
At Birmingham, of course. Come on.
What do you mean? He was not in the Premier League. He was never with Birmingham.
Yeah, he was at Birmingham in the Premier League, wasn't
Wrong.
He?
Wrong. Wrong. Man United, Charlton, and mainly West Ham.
Oh, he never played in the Premier League at Birmingham.
No.
Okay.
And then Carlos Bocanegra, I missed, with Fulham. You wouldn't have gotten that either. Look at you, the blank stare on your face.
Right, I would have forgot about Bocanegra.
Do you even want to try to get the other ones?
No, come
on. Now, the hints that they gave, they did tell you how many games and they did tell you the clubs. But here, I'll read the other ones. Brad Friedel, Tim Howard, Clint Dempsey, Casey Keller, Jeff Cameron, Brad Guzan, Brian McBride, Claudio Reyna, Jozy Altidore, DeAndre Yedlin, and the one that I was very proud of myself for getting, Marcus Hahnemann. Goalkeeper.
That's Reading goalkeeper. And then of Wolves.
Wolves. Yeah. So there you go. This was a fun show, my friend. I can't believe how long we've gone, and I can't believe how much of it is my fault.
It's a meaty podcast, and people are going to enjoy it. We'll have one on Thursday
yep.
as well.
Hey, good stuff. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.